side of things are confused.
Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunatu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvisha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
page 7, Mula Sahib. Isn't meditating on the form of the Lord within one's mind superior to imagining a form with the help of the material elements? Gaurachand Babaji. They are one and the same. The mind follows matter, and whatever it thinks of is also material. We may say that Brahman is all-pervading, but how can our minds actually conceive of this? We will be forced to think of it in terms of the all-pervasiveness of the sky. How can the mind go beyond this consideration? Our conception of Brahman is therefore constrained by the limitation of material space. If one says, I am meditating on Brahman, the experience of Brahman will be limited by material time, for it fades when one's meditation is concluded. How can the mind's meditation grasp an object that is above matter when it is conditioned by time and space, which are material phenomena? So, as we were discussing, the four means in the psychology, there's the idea that we're going to be, the mind will be not connected with the senses. It'll stop, being distracted by the senses. But then the problem comes up is that the mind is always going to be connected to the senses. So the idea that it won't be, that's an illusion. Right? It's always connected. The point is then you connect that to Krishna. The point is the material elements are Krishna's. And all we have to use is material elements. Right? That's what our senses are made of. That's what they can interact with. That's what the mind's made of. That's what the mind can interact with. So the problem's not that you're dealing with external energy. The problem is that we think it's separate from Krishna. That's what technically makes it material. Right? We can also just say material, meaning that it's the inferior energy. So it can be used either way. In general, you just say material, that this is material. But if you want to distinguish between the elements itself and the consciousness towards those elements, then you'll say this is external energy, and then the concept that this is not connected to Krishna, that makes it material. But if I see it in connection with Krishna, it's spiritualized. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So just so that one's clear that the term material can be used in either way, in a more general term or a very specific term, right? All the Vedic terminology generally is like that. It has its generic usage and it has its specific. So that's why sometimes it becomes confusing, right? So the mind can't be separated. So this idea is instead of meditating on the form of the deity or worshipping the deity, I could meditate upon the impersonal or just meditate upon the form of the Lord. But he's pointing out is that meditation on the form of the Lord means you've made the deity in the element of mind. And mind is one of the eight elements. Right? So we're complaining, oh, it's made out of stone. No, I will do it in the mind. But mind is also a material element. If the problem's material, it's still material. Right? Does that make sense? So, because the mind is limited by time and space. Now, he's giving the point here is that you have the aspect of the nirakar. So there's no form, there's no qualities. So isn't that kind of meditation superior, right? Because that's what that means. This mula is asking, but that's what the Brahmins were telling him. But at the same time, in his own philosophy, that will also be there, because they're not distinguishing between material and spiritual. And they can't distinguish that there's spiritual form, and material form is a reflection of that. Yes.
So is it a misconception that subtle material, then that's spiritual or...
Yeah, well, it's just like on Pranamoy. Mm. If you have that moment where all the kids are there and they're all eating and they look up with that big smile and that, and everything's peaceful and everything's perfect, they'll actually consider it a spiritual moment. Or I go out into the forest and I'm not thinking about the office and Facebook and all the different things of this and that. And then there's that moment you just appreciate the mode of goodness of being the forest, and you call it spiritual. But all we've done is one was pranamoy, and the other was just the subtle form, anamoy in the mode of goodness. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Does that mean that manasa puja gives the same result as if we were doing actually?
Yes. Yes. It's exactly the same. So if you do the external bahir puja or antaranga puja, it doesn't matter. The point of why in puja, it's recommended to do manasa puja, but in a short way, because you have the facilities for the Bahiranga Puja, is that the mind will be thinking of so many things. Right? You've gotten up in the morning, you've taken your bath, you know, you come to the temple of Mangalartik, then you may have been focused now on the deity and on the name, or you may be still thinking of so many things. You know, okay, after puja, I got to, you know, be quick, you know, take breakfast, I got to go do this today and that today, and then, you know, this one was, you know, worried about that, and why are they so worried about it, what's their business, all this is going on in the mind. So the manasa puja, you can't do the manasa puja and think of those at the same time. You can do the external puja and think of that at the same time. So the manasa puja, what it does is it spiritualizes the mind. So the mind stops thinking about all the other external engagements and just thinks of the deity. And the other, so that's one, is then the mind becomes focused, because you've already purified yourself, you purified the paraphernalia, the place, everything. So the only thing left that's not been spiritualized is the mind. So that's the final thing you do. Then you install the deity into the argya and then start the main puja. Right? So now, the other advantage, so that's the advantage, the mind now has been spiritualized, because that whole part of the puja is called yoga. Right? In the Panchanga Puja, it's called yoga. It means, in other words, you're linking with the Supreme. The Lord is transcendental, so you're bringing yourself and the paraphernalia to the transcendental platform. So that's what it's for. Then ija is the actual expression of the devotion through the worship, the rituals of the worship. Now, another advantage is there is that your paraphernalia, you know, may not be of such great quality. Right, but in manasa puja, you can make it out of whatever you want. You know, solid gold paraphernalia. You know, inlaid with jewels. Anything you want. You know, you do the bath. You've brought water from all over the place. You know, wherever you want. You know, so all those things. Then that's there. But so then, when you do the external puja, when you actually offer it, the mind will remember the manasa puja. So you'll be simultaneously offering, let's say, your paraphernalia. But you'll also be remembering the paraphernalia you offered in the manasa puja. Mm-hmm. So in that way, you also increase the quality there. So it has a double benefit. But it's not the main part of the worship. You could say it's the most important aspect of yoga. But it's not the most important aspect of the whole Panchanga puja. Like that. That's just so that you deal nicely. Is that okay? But it's exactly the same. That's why you have in Nectar Devotion that example of that Brahmin from South India, who he didn't have paraphernalia and facility, so he just did manasa puja. But in that case, you do it very fully. You won't do it quickly. You know, you go through every element, every detail. You'll go through. Like in manasa puja, you don't necessarily have to set everything up. You know what I'm saying? Because you've already set things up. You all you have to do is think of the actual, you know, offering of the argya, or offering of the bath, or offering of the clothes. You don't actually have to do more than that, because it's enough that it it catches all the 16 items that have been caught. You know what I'm saying? So it can be a series of just pictures like that, or however much that one part, that part you animate, and then you go to the next one and animate. But you don't have to fill in the gaps. But if you're doing full manasapuja and then not doing the external, you'd necessarily go, you get your bucket, you go down to the river, get the water, you know, bring it back, put it, you do all the things like that. That's why that Brahmin would be sitting there for hours and doing it. But if you have less time, it just means you cut out all those parts. So it's just, does that make sense? But the point is what he's making here, what Gaurachand Babaji's making, the point of, it's still material. In the way of, if your complaint, it's not material, means it's still being done through material elements. Because you can say, no, but I'm, through the mind, I'm meditating on Brahman, then why is it stops? Because Brahman is a transcendental eternal platform, but you're limited by time and space. You have to sit down there, you have to look at your wall, or not look at it, whatever you like, but, you know, somehow the wall should be there, right, you know? You know, the Buddhists meditate on the wall, the Mohammedans, they face the wall, you know, like that, you know, you go to the western side there, and they're also looking at the wall. You know, it's all about the wall. Like that, you know. But you're not supposed to put any bricks in it. But, you know, just there should be just the wall like that. Right? Don't adjust the wall. Yeah.
Can you be a brick in the wall?
Huh?
Can you be a brick in the wall?
You're already a brick in the wall. That's the point. Yeah. Yes.
How about the manasa pranam?
Manasa pranam. Well, as long as you also throw in manasa prasad, you know, manasa sleep, you know, manasa being the greatest guy in the world, you know, all those things. You just, you know, manasa rich, you know, like that. You know, go for it. You know, why limit yourself? You know, of course, I mean, there is the limitation of time and space, but that's, you know, that's why I say the sky's the limit, right? But that is, the sky is the limit. You can't get beyond sky. That's as subtle as it's going to get, you know? Because the mind, even though it's subtler than sky is the subtlest thing it can think of.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Because even if it thinks of, you say, false ego, it's still thinking of false ego through the external elements.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? And the intelligence, it's dealing with and calculating, analyzing material elements.
Mm.
So it can't, means anything that you deal with is the pancha, the Mahabhutas.
Yeah.
Right? Even though three more are subtle, but they also are connected with the Mahabhut. Otherwise, how is it there's a manifestation? So the mind has to deal with that manifestation. Yes.
Do we distinguish between sky and ether and space as such? Or
they're the same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
Like that. Space means is sky, because that's ether.
Mm.
But space you're is the element of accommodation. Because
yeah.
It means you're looking at the all accommodating, the feminine aspect of it. You know, that is able to accommodate like that. Okay, so does that make sense? So the Muslim is bringing up the point of that wouldn't it be considered better to use meditation for thinking of this form than to have an actual external deity made of the elements? But what Gaurachand Babaji is pointing out is that it's still material elements, right?
Mm.
Like that, mind can't function outside of it. It is a material element itself, so it becomes spiritualized, right? That's why it says the intelligence is the closest thing to the soul, because you can use spiritual intelligence, right?
Mm.
Does that make sense? But you spiritualize the mind. But when you get to the spiritual world, you'll have spiritual mind, right? Because there's a non-difference between the soul and the body there. There it is non-different. So the thing is we're encumbered here because we think that we're in the spiritual world. We think it's eternal here because it is in the spiritual world. We think it's a place of happiness because it is in the spiritual world. But it's not. So that's the illusion, right? The illusion's not that, you know, if this is here or not. The illusion is you think this is eternal and it's going to make me happy.
Mm.
That's the illusion.
Mm. Mm.
Right.
Yes.
Do they have deities in the spiritual world?
Do they have deities in the spiritual world? Yes, means you go there, and Nanda Baba, he has a Nisringa deity, and Radharani worships the sun god, and yes, yeah, so they have. Yeah, so they have deity. Means the point is what they do in the spiritual world, at least in Vrindavan. I would say Golok, is the mood that's there is as if they're in Gokul. They don't deal as if they're in Goloka. They deal as if they're in Gokul. That's why for the residents of Goloka, there's no difference between Goloka and Gokul, because the mood is always that of Gokul, even if they're in Goloka. Does that make sense? Otherwise, what's the meaning of saying that the gopis don't have husbands in Goloka, but they think they do? You know, otherwise it would be, you know, okay, we're in Gokul, okay, now we got husbands, now we're back, okay, great, now we don't have husbands anymore. So that makes it so much easier. But no, they still think they have husbands, because in Gokul they do, because they're the same place. All it is in Gokula they manifest, the demons manifest, in Goloka they don't manifest. But Krishna's mood is that he's in Gokul. That's why sometimes it even mentions when it's talking about pastimes Golok, it'll say Gokul. So also Gokul applies to both Bama Lila and the Goloka Lila. But, you know, if you want to make a distinction, it's the same thing, like these terms have many usages. Then it actually is different, because the mood is always Gokul. Because the mood is actually what's important, not what you're dealing with. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Do they have gurus?
Do they have gurus? Of course.
So they take diksha and...
No. See, diksha is a pancharatric thing. It means you're taking the Bhagavat form and formalizing it into rules so that the conditioned living entity can relate to it. Plus, it regulates him so that he can elevate himself. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, they are initiated by accepting the instruction.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like the six Goswamis were initiated on the Bhagavat platform, not on the Pancharatric platform. Mm-hmm. We're initiated on the Pancharatric platform. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So one has from one's guru from here is there, but when there's more gurus, one's going to learn so many things. Radharani teaches things, Lalita, Vishaka, they all teach things. The different, all the Astasakis, they're expert at different areas, or masters. So the ones who are masters specifically, they teach.
Yeah.
Like that. So one has to learn these things, right? So you have to learn, you know, the 64 arts, you need to learn that. You know, you need to learn their mood. You need to, like that. So one always has, yes, there's always spiritual masters.
So the difference is that here everything is much more formalized because we're all over the place,
it's formalized because just the nature of the place. You need form.
Yeah, yeah.
See, it means, in other words, it means if you have the masculine aspect of what you're trying to attain, that particular quality, but you still need the feminine aspect of the form and action to do it, to obtain that. So that, you know, from Shankya, the masculine and feminine form, you can't get rid of those two. The two are non-different, but they're different. There's a distinction, but they're non-different. You can't appreciate the masculine without the manifestation of the feminine, and the feminine has no basis without the masculine. You know what I'm saying? If you have a kitchen with pots and pans, and there's no cooking and nothing in the kitchen to cook, does the kitchen actually have any meaning? No. Like that. So the feminine aspect is manifest, but the masculine of the cook is not.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. And if you want to cook, but if there's no pots and pans or ingredients, can you cook? No. So you can't manifest the cooking without the feminine. The masculine can't manifest without the feminine. But the feminine has no basis without the masculine. Right? So that's the point, is the material world. Material means you're seeing the feminine without the masculine. You understand? So, and then the impersonalists are seeing the masculine without the feminine. So both of those are material concepts. You're seeing one without the other. That's why we say exclusive monism. That's not a problem. Krishna is one. But at the same time, the feminine aspect's also there. But he is one, he is many. He's both. That's his position as God. We're only one. You know, we can only be jivas. We can't and limited. But he can be the smallest. He can be the biggest.
Yeah.
He can be everything. That's why he's God.
Mm.
Right. So anything that the energy is anything, it's all him. So it's non-different from him. That is the manifestation, his potency. Means, in other words, if we work by the causation, is that the effect can't be different from the cause. So if the energy can do all these things, mm-hmm. can take all the forms and do all the activities and get results, that means it's because it's based in the original cause, which is the Lord. So he's the ultimate cause. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So the energy in him are non-different. It's just how he manifests himself is through his energy. That's why it says, the Prabhupada always uses the term, the Lord appears through his internal potency. Right? It's not that his manifestation is different. That form you see, that is his eternal potency. But that's him. Because he is his energy. But at the same time, he's different from his energy. You know, that's where it gets to the limit of what the mind can deal with. So that's what Guru Chand is talking about here. Because we want to limit it by time and space. You know, if it's not done, what is the form? No. The point is that is the form. His internal potency is the form. He doesn't manifest through external potency. The potencies are manifest there, but at the same time, because the potencies are non-different from him, the potencies also have the masculine and feminine principle. So therefore, you still have the masculine and feminine principle. The masculine is him. The feminine is his energy. But it's still just done by his energies. So that's where the difficulty comes, is because we want to, it should be this or it should be that. You know, it's Advait or it's Dwait. Or, okay, it can be Advait and Advait, but now it's Advait, now it's Dwait. But no, it's Dwait and Advait at the same time. That's where the difficulty comes. So that's why the Gaudiya philosophy can answer the questions of even other Vaishnav lines. Any questions that they are doubtful at, the Achintabheda Veda Tattva can answer it. In conclusion, because we don't need to get into detail. They have enough detail. They have their own detail. But their conclusion, that we can take it further. Like that. Okay. Does that answer this? Okay. One may reject the idea that the form of the deity can consist of material elements such as earth and water, and one can imagine that Ishwar is situated in the directions of space. But still, this is all the worship of matter, right? You can say, okay, earth and water, that's material. But you know, in space, what space and what was the other one? Directions of space. Then why directions mentioned here? Right. Let's say the Hindu is going to do some worship. Which way do you face?
East.
Right. So direction is there. Right. And there's some space in which you're either going to do the puja or you're going to imagine. Right. And for the Mula Sahib, which way is he going to face?
Mecca,
right? Yeah, so then that's the way it's going to work. So time and space are still going to be there. But one's considering that this is better, this is more subtle. So it's in superior. But it's still material. Maybe superior, but it's still material. Right? No material object can support one's attainment of the transcendental goal. Right? In other words, even you're doing the subtle, material can't give the spiritual. Right? You can't do. So we're dealing with something else, because they're saying, you're using material things, saying it's God, and through that you're going to attain God. But the point is no, it's God descends. That's the element of adhoksaja. Right? It means when we're dealing with the levels of gaining understanding, then the level one wants to function at is that hoksaja, the Lord descends into, because you see according to the proper philosophy and proper recommendation of the scriptures, how your actions are. So therefore, you are able to appreciate the Lord because he descends into it. Like that. But it's not that it becomes. He descends into it. Right? Does that make sense? Because like we said, the pillar, it's his energies. The energies are holding up the roof. But if you understand that strength to hold up the roof, the strength is Krishna, and the pillar is the feminine aspect, then he manifests there. Because you're seeing him, the Purusha, there, then the Purusha manifests. Otherwise, the energies are already taken care of. You know what I'm saying? You go, there's a big man like that. You can get all the work done through his secretaries outside. But if you know him personally, and start talking about him, he might come out to meet you. But as far as getting the work done, the secretaries were going to take care of it. Right? Because it's his secretaries. Does that make sense? So for Hiranyakashipu, it's just the Lord's energies in the pillar. So he'll hit the pillar, and nothing will happen other than getting a blunt sword. Or, you know, if he's got a really good sword, he'll break the pillar. But that's about it. But Prahlad Maharaj is saying, no, this is Krishna that is that potency in the pillar. Right? So therefore, when he hits the pillar, Nrisimhadev comes out. Does that make sense? Right. So that's the point. Yeah. It means this is the approach we're making here. We're not directly talking about deity worship at this point. Right? Because deity worship, that form, is non-different from Krishna because his energy and him are non-different. But all we're pointing out is that element that he can be there or not according to his sweet will. It's not that because I've worshipped, therefore he has to respond. That's what the Karma Mimamsa is going to, that'll be our next, upcoming chapters. They think, because I did it, he has to come. But no, he's independent. Yes.
And personalists, it's still Krishna descending to give them whatever spiritual result, right?
For the personalists or impersonalists?
Impersonalists.
For the impersonalists, they just think it's Brahman. They think that Krishna, the forms, are material, right? And so, therefore, it's just a manifestation of the mode of goodness. Mm. But they don't actually understand the... If they say Brahman is all-pervading, it's all-pervading. So that means the pervasion is also there of the illusion that they think is there. But they take illusion as separate from Brahman. But that means there's two entities. Yeah. You understand? So there, that concept of having God and the devil is already there in the impersonal. In these, anything that's not Vedic has this. Mm. Right, because the impersonalist, with Mayavadis, it's actually Buddhism, so it's not actually Vedic. They're just using Vedas to establish their philosophy rather than not using Vedas to establish their philosophy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this idea that God and his energy, it's separate in the way of that is no connection, no interaction, he has no control. That's an atheistic concept. Because the point is, it is his energy, and he is in control of it. Though he himself may not personally deal with it, but still he's in full control. Right? So the subtleties are there. So now we're discussing about the concept that mental is better than actually having an external manifestation. But Gaurachand Babaji is pointing out, no, it's the same. It's still material. Right? Then he'll explain... more.
Yeah.
No material object can support one's attainment of the transcendental goal. The only thing that facilitates this is the awakening of the inclination towards Ishwar. So you're awakening your consciousness, right? Because we see it as material because the consciousness is polluted, right? The chitta is polluted. You awaken the actual consciousness, then chitta is purified, right? Then we're actually dealing with the Lord. This inclination is inherent within the jivatma, right? That's the natural. It's not artificial. That if now he's conditioned, he could do that or be spiritual. No, spiritual is normal. This is not normal. And is gradually strengthened and converted into bhakti when one utters the name of God, recites his pastimes, and receives inspiration from beholding the deity. Right? So that by that constant association, then one becomes inspired.
Mm.
Does that make sense? The Lord's spiritual form can be experienced only by pure bhakti, not by jnana and karma. So even though the means the neophyte may be strongly conditioned by karma and jnana, right? That's the meaning of karma, misya, jnana, mistra. is that that element is still there. But the point is there is the element of that devotion. He accepts the supremacy of the Lord, the eternality of his form, and the deity is non-different. So even though he still may see the material aspects, he's still getting that benefit because he's also hearing the name, hearing the pastimes, associating with devotees. So that devotion is awakened. Through that devotion, that's what he's seeing of the deity, right? So therefore, the neophyte may sometimes appreciate, may sometimes not, right? The Madhyama appreciates consistently, but it's kind of more is that the Lord's conscious and he's interactive, but it's the Uttama thinks that this is actually non-different. Mm-hmm. This is the Lord directly. You understand? It's just like this. You walk in, you offer your obeisances, you know, like that, you're in a hurry, you go out, right? Now you know this is the deity, that's why you're offering obeisances, right? You're walking by, so you should offer obeisances, right? No? But the point is if you actually fully felt this is the personality of Godhead standing right here, would you just walk in and walk out so quickly? Yeah. You would interact a little bit more and explain, you have to go this and that, you know, you like that, and really like the step. Mm. You know, you would do something more. Mm. So that's the difference. Mm. Right? It's subtle, but it's different. So these are pointed out so that one doesn't think the position that I'm dealing with, that's the perfection. Because that's the problem. Prema is perfection. Anything less is not perfection. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is how to bring it to that. Now, the point is even that you have any idea that this is Krishna, that already is perfection, but there's different levels of perfection. There's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, the Kanishta is perfect, but the Madhyama is more perfect, and the Uttama is most perfect. Right? Does that make sense? You know, yes.
In what way is the Kanishta perfect? I don't understand. Because the Kanishta doesn't have faith in the devotees and anything. He makes mistakes like anything. How can you call that perfect?
Well, but what are you comparing it to?
So the most perfect.
And what about the Madhyama? Okay, so that means there must be some more perfection in the Madhyama.
Yeah, I'm not speaking about Madhyama.
Okay, let us say a carpenter goes and he finds a piece of wood, right? Now he goes into a stack of wood, and he looks through it for the perfect piece of wood for what particular work he's going to do, right? Now he'll talk about this piece of wood is perfect. Is it a piece of furniture? No. But as far as being, having the potential, it's perfect.
I mean, if it's a good Danish wood, you know, you want the best quality wood, you're looking for Danish wood.
Yes, so, okay, Danish wood. So that means the neophyte is the Danish wood. Right? And the non-devotee, he's the apple crate. You can't make anything out of an apple crate. Okay? I mean, if you want to stand on it in Hyde Park, maybe, but other than that, I would give it a miss. Does that make sense? So the point is that non-devotee has no perfection at all. Nothing. Zero. Even if they're manifesting nice qualities, they're gentle, they're kind, they're generous, all these things, those are just the modes of nature. It's not qualities that the soul is inherently trying to manifest. So it's just the modes of nature. So yes, it's a nice manifestation of the modes of nature, but you can't give the soul the credit for that. But when he surrenders to the Lord, then any qualities that are there that are good, those are connected with the soul. And so there may be stuff that's not perfect, but it's just like that piece of wood. The person who knows how to make the one into the other doesn't see it as a problem. Right? You know what I'm saying? The let's say the customer, he comes in, okay, where's my couch? And he just sees a piece of wood. You know? There's a saying in English, don't show an unfinished painting to a fool. Do you have that one?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Means, in other words, there's a thing, architects, engineers, they all do it, is that you have a concept, and they draw these conceptual lines and all things like that. Now, someone who knows the field knows, okay, hey, that's great, that has all the elements in it. Now you just fill it in and make it nice to look at. Right? So he's got his concept of what it is, his background, his different things, you know, what's the whole, composition of the painting. But if it only has that much, someone who doesn't know painting comes in, they'll go, this is not finished. Mm. It's kind of like, duh, of course it's not finished. You know, this is the concept of it. But they'll think, oh, it's inferior, it's not good. Does that make sense? So it's the masters who are saying, the ones who can make neophytes into uttamas, they're saying that the neophyte is perfect. But the point is prema is most perfect. That's what you're trying to get to. So therefore, in this case, perfect's not good enough. Okay? So then it's once you've established that there's the materialists and then there's the devotees, then you can discuss your point. But you're taking your point and saying, you know, it's almost like the neophyte devotee and the karmis are basically kind of the same. No, they're light years apart. Now, within devotees, now there's a great difference between, it means your big difference is between your neophyte and your madhyama, not between the madhyama and uttama. That's why I asked you about the madhyama, because you want neophyte uttama and left the madhyama out of it. Like that. Because we kind of just put it, well, here's this, and then way over there's that. No, here's the neophyte, way over there is the madhyama, way past that is the uttama. Like that. Because the madhyama is advanced. Because then within pure devotees, then the madhyama is perfect, the uttama is most more perfect, and your one on prema is the most perfect. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Yes.
We've seen that we've lost many potential logs.
Yeah, but they never go away. They just go out and float around for a while. They'll be back. Like that. That's why that line's so famous, right? Don't know that one?
I'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Because everybody will be back. It's just a matter of time. Okay, so the point is that the Lord's spiritual form can be experienced only by pure bhakti, not by jnana and karma. So the elements that the neophyte is appreciating the deity, that's the pure devotion. But it's not necessarily the prominence. That's why he's called a neophyte. So karma and jnana are still there in their activity. So when those are mixed in, then at that time it's not as much appreciated. Does that make sense? Because it's not that, otherwise we take the thing is that the neophyte never does anything that's pure devotion. No, he does. But it's not the main majority of what he does. The madhyama means that the pure devotion is the prominence, though it's not 100%. Does that make sense? Prema is 100%. Right? Bhava means it's almost there. But still, there's a little bit of attitude element that have to be worked out. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Even within prema, we have the different rasas?
That's another. When we get to the end of the book, then you'll have to crack your head on that. Don't worry. There's like 20 chapters of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but
yes, you could say, then you could say, if you want to take what we were discussing before one step further, then within the uttama, then the one on bhava would be perfect. The one on prema would be more perfect. The one who's past that would be most perfect. Right? So therefore, Radharani is the most perfect. And then if you want to take it a step further, then Radharani, she is the devotee, yeah, and everybody else is her assistant. Because what she has, that's devotion. So we can have devotion to her. Right? But we can never have the devotion she has to Krishna. Right? But if we have that devotion to her, to assist her, then we get the same benefit. Mm-hmm. You understand? Because she has that devotion, so we're assisting in that devotion. So then we get that benefit.
So yes. If we try to serve Krishna directly, we're actually not serving him because would do a better job anyway.
How will you serve? Yeah. I mean, the point is as we were discussing here, you have to serve through the energies. Mm-hmm. So who is that energy? That's the Sarup Shakti. So Radharani is the Sarup Shakti. Right? But Radharani is your highest manifestation of the Sarup Shakti because it's Ladini. Yogamaya, then you're dealing with the Samvit and Sandini. Mm-hmm. You know, so the situation and the activities. In other words, the forms and activities. That's what Yogamaya manifests. But Radharani is the mood. Right? So the mood's the most important. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the, yes.
So Maharaj, to develop faith in the deity as eternal principle is the beginning of devotion?
Yes. That's the significant qualification of the neophyte is that the form of the Lord is eternal, and the deity is the form of the Lord, so is eternal. Right. So that's what sets the neophyte apart from other pious persons who follow the Vedas and worship Vishnu. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, let alone those who worship demigods. So those who worship Vishnu, those who understand that the form is eternal, they're neophytes. They're devotees. Those who don't understand it are not actually devotees. They're only Vaishnavas by the definition that they worship Vishnu. But they don't actually worship him on the eternal platform, so it's not actual worship of Vishnu. It's a naimittic worship of Vishnu. It's not a nitya worship of Vishnu. Right? Because it's temporary. They're only going to worship until they come to the liberated platform, then they'll give it up. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's interesting in the story of Gop Kumar, he was having a darshan of Lord Jagannath, and as he wanted to live for Vrindavan, but he couldn't for 1 month because as soon as he saw the deity, he forgot about everything else. And then it happened like day after day after day after day.
Yeah.
And he couldn't live. And then when he left, he didn't even go to the temple because he knew this is what's going to happen. So he just left.
Yeah.
So this is personal.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. So when he went to Vaikuntha, then he sees him as...
Yeah.
So in other words, any form of the Lord he sees as Krishna and Vrindavan. You know, it's just like, let's say, Krishna and Vrindavan, they're doing a drama and he dresses up in a different way. But, you know, so you interact on one level based on the costume he's using, but at the same time you know it's Krishna. So it's like that, you know. Yeah, the personal thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. For the adherents of those other religions, we can say that they will never reach that point.
No, without the means, in other words, without the association of a pure devotee, they can't reach that point. So that's why association of pure devotees is the most essential. Because otherwise, it's not through the ritual. It's not through the knowledge. So because one has the knowledge of that religion and follows the ritual of that religion, that still won't get you God. It'll make you pious, you know, may develop, you know, kind of that agyata sukriti, some faith, you know, like that. But that faith is not complete because one is not dealing with the eternal aspect. Because otherwise, this lifetime, okay, you're on this side of the fence and they're on that side of the fence, okay? And so then, you know, how you say, you know, you shoot a mortar over there and they shoot a rocket over here. So, you know, when you die, you're thinking of them and they're thinking of you. So what does that mean? Next lifetime, you're on that side of the fence and they're on this side of the fence, you know? Does that make sense? This could complicate things, you know, if you bring in karma and that, you know. That could get really, really wild here. Yeah, so then the whole point is that then you're still having that faith, but you're expressing it through a different form, and if the form is the faith, your faith has changed. Hmm. So that's the point. Faith can change, but bhakti doesn't. Right? So that's why then prema is considered mature faith. Right? Is that like that? Does that make sense? So it's good that it's a step forward, there's a regulation of the life, there's acceptance of a supreme, and in this case acceptance of a single supreme, so that's good. But the same time as that supreme also has three features. He has the personal, but he also has the impersonal, and he has the localized. So they're trying to take all three of them, put them into one, and then they have a problem. You know, or they say that there's three, but they can't actually distinguish. They say the one's the other, and this and that. You know, so the one is God. But, you know, what about? So then, what's the need of God? So if he's not, you know, what's? They can't explain it, so they can't deal with the three aspects. So that's the point: is the Vaishnavism is very able to very clearly deal with all three aspects. Does that make sense?
Maharaj,
yes.
Once in Goa, we were talking to a senior member, and he said that when the Portuguese came, they tried to put all the Hindus into the church. But, and they went for 10, 20 years, and still they kept the same lifestyle, so they were bewildered. And he was saying that they saw their God in there, so that didn't matter.
Yeah, yes, it didn't matter. Yeah, so that's the point, is that we don't have a, you know, if you go into a church or into a synagogue or into a mosque or like that, still Krishna's there. Yeah. It's just that they don't appreciate how much he's there. You know. So that's the
non devotee can see only pious and
impious. Pious and impious. Yeah, I mean, there's a kind of a glimmer of the concept of God, but it's not very deep, because they know there's a supreme, but then everybody understands that, even the aboriginal, there's a supreme. Now, whether it's a, you know, the supreme's manifest to a rock or a crocodile or, you know, whatever it is, then there's still that asma, supreme. Mm-hmm. You know, even amongst the animals, there's the bigger animal, so he's supreme. So that concept is always there, you know. It's you can't get around that, but it's just how much you appreciate the actual personal aspect of the supreme. Because to understand the impersonal, you actually have to understand the personal. So even a bona fide impersonalist still doesn't understand the impersonal to the level that the personalist will. So that's why we say para-Brahman, the supreme Brahman, because that means of Brahman, still he's the supreme Brahman. It's not all one Brahman, right?
Mula Sahib, matter is distinct from God. Our tradition proclaims that Satan has introduced the worship of deities formed of material elements just to enslave the jiva in material existence. In our opinion, it is better to avoid such idol worship. Right? So now he's intelligent enough, he's able to translate, because he's talking with Gaurachand Babaji, he's able to translate the teachings of the Quran into the vocabulary in that of the Vaishnavas. Right? But he's presenting as that you know, like that. So another only word, he just doesn't use the term Maya. Right? So in other words, he's saying Maya has introduced deity worship through material elements just so the jiva will become enslaved in material existence. And so, yes, if you're worshipping the demigods or some made-up form, that's true. But worship of Vishnu is not, because that's not coming from Maya. Right? The idea that this demigod will make you happy, that's coming from Maya. Right? Does that make sense? Shastras will describe it because living entities want to be in Maya. Right? So at least there should be a consistency of how the person worships the demigod and then how you would actually worship the Supreme Lord. The mechanics should be the same so that all you're doing is replacing the deity. Right? Does that make sense? The smart is worshiping the demigod, but if you remove that and put in Vishnu, he'll worship the same way. Now all you have to do is now change his consciousness, and it'll still be the same. Right? So that's why there's a consistency in the Vedic, that it's one culture. There's not two cultures, there's not many cultures. There's one culture, the Brahminical culture. Right? But then there's what you want to get from this Brahminical culture. That's what the difference is. Gaurachand, Ishwara is one and unsurpassable. Right now he's going back to his point, is Allah is one. So if Allah is one, The point is he is one. So what's the problem? And unsurpassable. He has no rival. Everything in the entire cosmic creation is created by him, and not by someone else. Right? Satan doesn't create anything. Right? And is subordinate to his will. So it works under his direction. Therefore, you know, so this point is opening. No one who's a monotheist will complain. Right? Therefore, he can be satisfied by any object when it's properly employed in his worship. Because the point is, if you're worshiping him and you're offering, let's say, your activity or your money and all that and giving it to God, how would God appreciate if he's totally transcendental? You've offered him something material. So why would he be interested? Right? So there's no form of the deity, but all the worship of the deity, that they'll do. And that's all through material things, but that's perfectly fine. Why? Because it's being done for the Lord. So they're not making that connection, that the same step, it's the same principle. In fact, none of the objects or persons that are other than Ishwara that a jiva may worship in forgetfulness of Ishwara can make Ishwara jealous or envious in every way, for he is Bhagavan. The fully renounced, all auspicious, supreme benefactor and well-wisher of everyone, right? Because before, he mentioned that God is jealous, right? So, because this is an important element in the Abrahamic religions, that God's jealous. You worship someone other than him, he gets angry. But he's pointing out is he doesn't actually get angry, because we're thinking he gets angry because we're thinking someone else is God, and therefore it compromises his position. He is God, and no one else is, so it never compromises his position. The point is you're not becoming God conscious. That's what you're supposed to do. That's his problem. His problem isn't that you're worshiping someone else saying he's God and now there's competition. That will never happen. You know? Yes?
When they got this idea.
Sorry?
Where did they get this idea
from? Because it means you have it in the means that these Abrahamic religions, what is the central feature of their let's say, what would be their central ashram? Huh? Grihastha. Huh? Yeah, the only ashram, right? Anything means how you say it. Yeah, there's only grihastha. It's either you're too young to get married or you're dead, right? You know, so, you know, hey. You know, so then the point comes up is, in there, is there elements of jealousy due to positioning or where you focus or where you give your energy? Yes or no? If you're standing there and I respect someone else first, then there's a problem. Right? You know? Or more. Or at a time which is not necessary. Yeah? You know what I'm saying? So that's where then all this concept would come up. But now, for the person who functions on that platform, if I say God's like that, then I'll take it seriously. But if I say God's not like that, then, you know, oh, he doesn't care. And so I'll just go on with my materialistic endeavor. Does that make sense? So it's important to establish, no, God does care. But he cares about us is that we're not worshiping him, therefore we're not happy. That's what makes him unhappy. It's not because you worship someone else, he's upset because of that. It's because of its effect on you, because it doesn't affect him. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. But we're thinking it affects him. Just as it affects us, it affects him. But if it doesn't affect him, then what does it matter if I do it? So that's why you say, no, he's a jealous person. You know, just like if, you know, what he was describing before. If one has a higher understanding, then God can be seen anywhere. Then, yeah, you can go to the church, sit through the ceremony. You don't have a problem. Because you're worshiping the same person. Just whether the person is doing the ritual understand that or not, that's another thing. But otherwise, you understand it that way. Does that make sense? So then the difficulty comes is that then if you're on that platform, there's no problem. So then it's just a matter of all these rituals are some level of step closer to God.
But the point is then there's what God himself as a person likes. Does that make sense? So therefore, then the highest ritual that you would use is one that God himself personally prefers. But otherwise, any of them, well, is a step closer. Right? So that you have is that aspect. But then the lower aspect, it's that if there's anything that's contradictory, there's confusion immediately. You know. So in other words, if he could do something wrong and be redeemed, why can't I also do it wrong, get the benefit of having done that wrong and enjoy, and then later redeem myself? So you have to say, no, you do this and you go to hell. Okay, you go to hell, but you'll be back. No, you'll go eternally. Okay, then I won't do it. You understand? So that's what we're dealing with. That's the level of consciousness that we're dealing with. It's not very developed. Right? I mean, it's like, you know, whatever it is, you know, the main guy goes away for how many days? Was it 40 or something? Huh? He was up on the Mount Sinai?
Yeah, 40 days.
40 days. So 40 days is one mandala, right? So when he comes down, they're already worshiping something else. Now, it wasn't that they just decided, hey, let's worship this and made it. You know how much trouble it is to make? You have to make the mold. You have to, you know, smelt the gold. You have to pour it in. You have to let it cool. You have to then, you know, carve it and make it nice. You have to build the whole. So that means way before 40 days, they're already doing this. Right? So just work back. How long would it take somebody to make a golden calf? And that's when they started, they lost faith. Right? So, you know, you're talking some weeks here. You know? So they didn't make it very long. That's the problem, you know. Is that it? And these are the 600,000. Right? You know? And all those ones are divided up into everybody else. Right? So that's what you're dealing with. So if you don't say these very absolute kind of statements, then they become bewildered. So therefore, that's why it's by association. Because just by the law, it's not enough. And not by the knowledge, it's not enough. You have to have association. So by association of bhakti, then one has more. Just like you have any priest, like here, this Mula Sahib. Now he is more knowledgeable, at the same time more broad-minded than others in his religious background. Therefore, he can even discuss this. Because the others is, why would he discuss it? If they're not who we are, then, you know, if you kill them, then you've done a good deed. You know, does that make sense? So here he's able to discuss, and as we see, he can relate to what is being discussed. That means he's read the Quran so well that he can see the principles that are at work, because they're discussing principles here. They haven't gotten into detail really at all. These are principles. So he's able to see that principle in the details that's given in Quran. Right? He's able to appreciate. But still, there's this one here is that because of the material and spiritual, therefore, you don't want to connect the two. Like that. Okay.
So, his point about offering money and things to God, but at the same time having the personal.
Yeah.
He's common to all these Abrahamic religions.
All. It's basically common to all religions that aren't Vaishnav. It's just the Vaishnav will be within the Vedic culture and Vedic contents, while the other ones will be outside of that. So it'll be much more speculative. You see much more motive, passion, ignorance, like that. But the Vedic, it will be situated in goodness, though it's not that the persons involved aren't goodness. You know what I'm saying? The person, let's say he's doing the Karmakanda Yajna, but all the rituals, all the situations, everything that's there is all in the mode of goodness. But he's performing it from the mode of passion because he wants the result. So it means there's all this mixes. We get confused like that. Well, how can somebody be doing something good and be bad? Or how can somebody be bad and have done something good and now he's redeemed? You know, it's like that. No, it's the consciousness that's the important element. It's not the other form. The form is through which you manifest. So good consciousness is naturally manifest through good form. That's why it says the Vaishnava is performing pious. His lifestyle is pious. It's in the mode of goodness. It's that what he offers to the Lord. Does that make sense? Only because being offered to the Lord is of a good quality. Right? So the difference between goodness and pure goodness is pure goodness, it's done purely for the benefit of the Lord.
goodness means there's some other aspect, either liberation or karma or jnana. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Even if there were a Satan, then certainly he could not possess even the slightest power to act against the supreme will of Bhagavan. Right? So now here's a very important point. Because for many, it's Satan's working independently of God and doing all this, though God doesn't want it, but somehow or another God doesn't have it. And at the same time, they don't think that they're being insulting.
Yeah.
You know, like that. They don't understand that, that's not a very nice way of looking at God. No, God is the supreme, and he has no rival. That's why he opened with, he has no rival. You know, oh yes, there's no rival. So therefore, Satan's not a rival. So if you start going into it and the detail of Satan, there might be some discussion. No, God's the supreme. He's there. He has no rival. He creates everything. It's by his will that everything is created, maintained, and destroyed. He's doing. Everyone will say yes. So therefore, Satan is not a rival. Right? He doesn't have the power. There's no question that he's even near. You know, even if you take from there that he's a fallen angel, he's an angel. Right? He's not God. He's just an angel. So, I mean, how much power can an angel have?
Flap its
wings. Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying with us, you know, we get blown away by that flap, you know, so like that, you know. So. Yeah. Good flap.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so. Even if there were a Satan, then certainly he would not possess even the slightest power to act against the supreme will of Bhagavan. Ultimately, he could only be another jiva and subservient to the Supreme Lord. Right? So here, you can say another jiva meaning someone acting in the post, or meaning jiva meaning servant. So depending upon how you're applying this. So he's doing it generic, that they're taking it as a person other than God. So he's actually just a jiva who's gone wrong. Right? So even if you're taking that, still is jiva, but the point is jiva can also mean servant. So energy can also is called jiva. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just the smallest of all of the jivas, right? You know. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's not a matter we're discussing the material energy's relationship with God or the internal potency's relationship with God. So we're talking about, when we use the term jiva, then we mean us. We're the ones who are not seeing that. Right? We're servants, but we think we're not. Like that. Ultimately, he can only be another jiva and subservient to the Supreme Lord. However, according to our Vaishnava understanding, such a gargantuan monster as the devil or Satan does not exist. Nothing can occur in this world contrary to the Lord's plan, nor is it possible for anyone to be independent of the Lord's control. So in other words, this position that he's independent, that he's doing whatever he likes against God's will, that's not possible, because then that means God is not the supreme controller. Right? Like that. It's not so therefore that concept of Satan doesn't exist. That the concept that there's an entity that keeps the living entities in illusion, that exists. But the definition, that principle is the same. But the definition of how they work is totally different. So Maya, that's correct, but this concept of Satan, that just doesn't exist. That's all we're doing is taking our mundane concepts of how it would work and applying it onto Maya, just in the same way as you're applying the material concepts onto God. Therefore, to avoid that, then he has no form. We don't apply this. We don't mind applying it to Satan, so he gets bigger and bigger and nastier, right? You know. Yes.
Then are we also to take the responsibility for us?
Yeah, of course, because the devil made me do it. Right? You know, so what can you do? I didn't want to do that. You know, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. that's the all encompassing out here. You know, like that. Okay. Yeah. Nothing can occur in this world contrary to the Lord's plan, nor is it possible for anyone to be independent of the Lord's control. Right? At this point, one may pose the question, if nothing is independent of the Ishwar, then how sin was created? Because, see, the point is this, they want to keep God away from anything bad. So therefore, it's all dumped on Satan, right? And then he influences us, so that's why we become involved. But actually, we're okay guys. But if you committed yourself to Satan, then, of course, then you're a bad guy, right? So all these things, because it makes it work, because there's not enough knowledge, right? So therefore, they can't appreciate, see that God is in control of everything, but at the same time, separate. Right? So these are his opulences. So how is sin created if nothing's independent of the Lord? This is our answer. Jiva is the servant of the Supreme Lord. Acknowledgement of this truth is called vidya, but forgetfulness is known as avidya. For whatever reason, certain jivas act in avidya and thus sow the seed of sin in their hearts. Sow the seed of sin. However, the eternal associates of the Supreme Lord do not sow the seed of sin in their hearts. Instead of inventing the extraordinary myth of Satan and further imagining a certain object as him, it would be more fruitful to recognize and understand the avidya within our own hearts as the cause of our sinful activity. Therefore, to worship the Sri Murti of Ishwar in the material elements is not an offense. Actually, such worship is most essential for those of low devotional qualification and particularly auspicious for those of high spiritual eligibility. So now he's pointing out, because before it's like Satan is binding the jivas. It's another trick of Satan to have them worship deities. Right? Because that then keeps him in illusion. Now he's pointing out, no, Satan can't function outside the Lord's thing. So sin is not Satan. Sin is your own independence from the Lord. So therefore, deity worship is not a sin. It's not something of Satan. One, that concept of Satan doesn't exist. It's your own desire to be independent of the Lord. So therefore, worshiping something in connection with the Lord, the form of the Lord that's bona fide in the proper way, that would be most auspicious for the living entity. Mm. Right? And he points it out, for the neophyte, it's actually essential. Mm. Because without it, he's only absorbed in matter, so this is the way he's going to see God, because he can relate to the matter. But with time, he starts to see it's not matter, it's God. Right? So that's why then he makes the point, such worship is most essential for those of low devotional qualification and particularly auspicious for those of high spiritual eligibility. So in other words, it's essential for those who don't have the qualification, but those who do have the qualification, then it's most auspicious. So it's beneficial all around. Right? Does that make sense? So you see how he separated it here? Because the point is Satan's made this worship, rather than come in Pancharatra given by this and that. He's come in as no. Satan, in that form, doesn't exist. This concept of sin comes because the living entities separate himself from the Lord. Therefore, worship of the Lord as given by the Lord, and that's auspicious. Right? It's not given by Satan. So you understand how the method was used there. To consider deity worship as unbeneficial is futile rhetoric and mere dogma. Scriptural evidence and logic cannot be found to support such a view. Right? So that's why with the smartas, even though they don't believe in the form of the Lord, the scriptures recommend it, and so they're following. So then for them, it's their own speculation that it's there just as motive goodness, so that something we can focus on. But actually, when we get to the perfectional stage, we don't need anything to focus on. But then that's still a concept of the mind that's in time and space. How do they know what it's going to be like being liberated? Right? Because a liberated person is not talking. Sugadev Goswami is not talking on the liberated platform. He comes in the Madhyama platform to explain things. Does that make sense? Mm. Mula Sahib, the worship of the deity formed from matter cannot increase the spiritual perception because the mind of the worshipper remains combined
thus to the properties of matter, right? So we can see he's understanding these Vedantic points, because that was the point made before, is that why, if we're saying that the worship of the mind is not better than the worship of the deity, right? Because based on the principle one's matter and one's not, the mind is also matter. So now he's using that same point. It's okay. But therefore, now we're talking transcendental. So he said the gross matter, the subtle matter, are still both matter. But now we're talking about transcendence. So how does transcendence connect with here? So now we've gotten rid of the sentiment, right? Because that's what he's saying. What was it? To consider deity worship as unbeneficial is futile rhetoric and mere dogma. So now he's gotten rid of that aspect, because that's a matter of dogma. It's not a matter of discussing. You just don't worship deities. So there's no discussion of it, really. Right? And so it's rhetoric. It's just arguments. They've taken these words, and then they're arguing over those words. So it's rhetoric. It's not actually logic. Right? So that's why he says it goes against logic and Shastra. Right? It may be good rhetoric, but it's not actually logic and Shastra. Because that's not what the Shastra is saying. Okay. So the worship of the deity formed from matter cannot increase the spiritual perception, because the mind of the worshiper remains combined thus to the properties of matter. Right? So if you worship matter in the form of the deity, since the mind is still confined by matter, that matter with this matter is not going to equal transcendence. Right? Because also we said before is that it's not the ritual that's going to get the transcendence. The Lord is independent, right? So that's also going to be the answer. Right? So they haven't brought that in. They're still working on just the ritual and the form and the material matter, and then there's beyond. But they hasn't caught the point how beyond comes into matter. Right? If we study the ancient historical accounts of those who became great devotees of the Transcendental Lord, we can understand your proposal to be mistaken. Right? Because he's saying no one will get to the Transcendental Platform, but we see a lot of devotees have gotten to the Transcendental Platform, and they've worshipped deities. So it's not that you can't bring that about. It is a matter of record that many neophyte devotees began their devotional practice by worship of the deity form. As they continue their deity worship in the association of pure devotees, their devotional mood gradually deepened. They increasingly realized the transcendental and conscious nature of the deity form. Right? So that's the next, the transcendental and conscious nature of the deity form. And eventually they plunged deeply in the ocean of transcendental devotional love. Right? So also in these, as much of the time these definitions are taking place, and we're not seeing that they're actually very logically presenting the things, just very sweetly. So he presented the neophyte, the Madhyama, and the Uttama platform of looking at the deity. Right? Therefore, the unavoidable conclusion is that satsanga is the root of all devotional advancement. Right, because here they're saying you worship the deity. It's not, no, it's you worship the deity in the association of pure devotees. That's what's going to get. But that's the problem with these idol worshippers. They're not worshiping the deity in the association of pure devotees. Right, and at the same time, is they've made up the deity, they've made up the ritual, they've made up everything. So, the association of pure devotees intoxicated with Krishna prema naturally awakens one's innate affection for Sri Hari. As this affection gradually increases, one progressively discards the material conception of the deity. Right? So the point is the material conception that the deity is made out of stone is discarded. One understands, no, it is the Lord. Right? So it's just like there's that story where, I'm not sure where it was, it was somewhere up north. And we told this story before, is where this one British, some kind of authority or something, he saw this one temple, and I guess it was a famous temple or something. And so he went to visit, so it'll be, part of the sightseeing, like that. So, he's new at all this, so, and, you know, not necessarily wanting to make any adjustments. So he walked into the temple with his shoes on. He was just walking into the temple looking around. And then after some point, he noticed that the Brahmins were behind him with cloth wiping the floor after he walked. Now, he didn't understand that, you know, shoes don't come in the temple, this, that. He just took it as an offense. You're saying that I'm unclean, you know, so I'm walking here, so you have to wipe the floor. So then he insulted, he left, went back, got his army, brought his army, and they, with all their cannons and all that, they destroyed the temple, you know, including the deity, everything. So then one devotee was asking Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how is this possible? If the deity is God, how would this happen? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, your material concept of the deity was destroyed. The deity wasn't destroyed. It's just a matter of, the deity allows you to be able to appreciate the Lord's presence. Right? Like when you say, Radha London Ishwara, that means there's a deity, form of Vishnu, that is the Lord of that place. And so by having that installation, you're able to appreciate that deity. But that deity is always there. Does that make sense? So simultaneously manifest in the stone, but at the same time is not the stone, because the Lord and his energies are non-different. So in the beginning, we think it's a deity, it's stone. But then with time, we understand, no, this is the Lord. Right? So that's why you have to have a proper form, so that what the deity looks like and what the Lord looks like aren't different. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it's like, does that make sense? You know, it's not like you do your worship of your deity and all that, and then when you have realization, then you find out, hey, you don't have a crocodile head? You know, it's like, you know, what's going on here? Like that. Then he says, I'm not Egyptian. You know, it's like that. You guys want to have a crocodile head? Hey, go for it. It says that. You know.
Interesting first conversation. Go on.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. As they continue their deity worship in the association of pure devotees, their devotional mood gradually deepened. They increasingly realized the transcendental and conscious nature of the deity form. Increasingly realized. In other words, the neophyte knows the Lord is transcendental and he's conscious and he's there, but it's just they don't necessarily always deal like that. You know, you're sitting there and you got a good spot, you know, for the Abhishek, and then someone comes in and gets too close and you start a whole scene going on there. You completely forgot the deity's right there, you know. So that's the thing. So one forgets these things. So it's not there. So he increasingly realizes the transcendental conscious nature. So when that's established, then that's the Madhyama. Right? And then, and eventually they plunge deeply in the ocean of transcendental devotional love. That's the Uttama. Therefore, the unavoidable conclusion is that satsanga is the root of all devotional advancement. The association of pure devotees, intoxicated with Krishna prema, naturally awakens one innate affection for Sri Hari. As this affection gradually increases, one progressively discards the material conception of the deity. This unfolding of spiritual consciousness brings the greatest good fortune. In contrast, the followers of non-Aryan religions generally oppose the worship of the deity form. However, how many of them have actually realized the transcendental all-conscious nature of Bhagawan and his spiritual creation? Instead, they are spending their time in sophistry and malicious argumentation. When can they expect to experience true devotion to the Lord? Right? So he's pointing out is that they're not advancing because there is no deity worship. Right? Like that. We haven't discussed what's bona fide and what's not. But we're talking about the principle, because the principle was, you know, why you're worshiping this particular form. No, it's why there's deity worship. So we're discussing just the principle. Right? Like that. So therefore, sophistry and malicious argumentation. So sophistry here would be meaning...
Jalpa.
Jalpa, yeah.
It can mean whatever you think is the truth for yourself becomes an absolute truth.
Okay, that's sophist. So the sophists, okay, because the sophists work on what the popular, what the people say that's truth.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So therefore, it's just sophistry in that they think it's the truth, and whatever they're doing like that, and malicious argument, just arguing against this one's good, this one's bad, everything like that. Does that make sense? Mm. So that's where you end up. But if you have the deity form and you're associated with pure devotees, then you'll realize the transcendental nature of the Lord. So we see all the examples in the past, it's worked.
Yeah.
Right? And you go over to any other line that's not using this, and where has it worked? Right? It's not. Yeah. Yes.
And that coming back to the question about the Anishta being perfect, it's the association that yeah. makes him perfect.
Yes. But it's also is that he's perfectly situated. So that's his perfection. You know, just like he has the potential. So that's the perfection. But every jiva has the potential. So therefore, that's why for the Uttama, he doesn't actually even distinguish there. Because all jivas have the potential. So all jivas are perfect. But it's we're looking for preaching, you look at those who are willing to accept that perfection and those who are opposed to it. So those who are opposed, we avoid. Those who are willing to accept, that's who we preach to. Like that. And those who have accepted it nicely, that's who we associate with. You know, and if they're more advanced, then that's who we worship them. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Mulla Sahib. To perform deity worship in divine devotional consciousness may be considered living without aberration. However, how can the worship of dogs, cats, snakes, and even of promiscuous men be permissible and considered as a devotional process? Okay, now he's come to the point of, okay, by the logic, and by evidence given, then we can see as, okay, the deity worship works. Okay? But now, we see within the Hindu society, they worship anything. You know, so here he gives, you know, dogs, cats, snakes, and even promiscuous men. How is that going to have any benefit? Okay, even we accept, okay, the deity, okay, is representing the Lord, is the form of the Lord, is non-different from the Lord, like that. Okay, but what about all these others? Right?
Huh. He might represent like cats, like Buddha Shringadai,
Krishna. I'm not sure if he's doing that. Like that, because dog, where do you get that? No, because you do have, they do worship, you know, different, you know, Vivekananda had his thing with, you know, dogs, or Ramakrishna with dogs, you know. Dog King stole the chapati, but because he's Narayan, wait, we didn't put ghee on the chapati, you know, so you got an inferior offering, you know, so he's running after the dog.
Poor Narayan.
Huh?
Poor Narayan.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an article about village worship in the rats.
Rats, they got rat worship, you know, snakes, you know, actual snakes. They put milk out for them and stuff like that. So there's all these different things are there. Because the idea is that for someone in the different modes, then it engages them. But still, the ritual in that is still in line. You have to have guru, you have to have shastra, you have to follow the sadhana. So there's something that connects it. So it's just replacing it with something higher. You know. So we don't say that it's good. I do that all day. Right?
Yeah. But at this point, there's no debate over whether that Krishna is a bona fide form to...
No, not at this point. It's just because we're saying, because here when we say deity worship, we mean Vishnu worship. Because he's already established that God is one, so we're not worrying about demigods and everything else. We haven't gotten into that detail, because that's where it gets really, really, you know, confusing or nasty. So that's why when one preaches, one starts with the Vedanta level, and logically presents it.
Mm-hmm. In areas where there's agreement, like that there is one Lord, and there's a difference between
the
material and spiritual nature,
right.
Rather than focusing on the actual form.
No, it's a matter of where you start. You know, so you're starting with Brahman, because Brahman, you could say, is a feature that most everybody will accept. But you also have to know which aspect. So therefore, there's just the one supreme Brahman, there's no form. Then you get into a problem. But you say there's the supreme person and all that, he controls everything, creator, everything, knows all the things, all pervading, then that'll be like that. So that's the form that gives both. It gives everything is there. Then you come down into the different deal with the different thing on the principle. The tendency is we like to go into the detail, because within the detail there's the emotion, and then we can get upset and angry and like that. So that's the kind of thing. But here you see is there's nobody's becoming angry here, because there's no detail. It's only being, it's etiquette is nice, and they're discussing just principles.
that's the advantage of discussing from the platform of Vedanta as opposed to ritual. You know what I'm saying? But the point is not that you get rid of Vaishnav ritual and replace it with non-Vaishnav ritual, and then that's considered soft preaching. No, it's that you establish the Vaishnav Vedanta and you show them how to apply that in what they're doing. But it doesn't mean we do it. Like, I don't have to do it for you to do it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say you have a race car driver, and he's teaching his son how to drive the car. He's not teaching him to race. He's teaching him just, how, what the steering wheel and the brake and stuff does. You know, how to be conscious of the road and the stop signs and all that. Does that make sense? The father was once explained to me, he says the... We're going down the road, some punk guys have a little bit bigger car, and so they're, doing whatever they're doing on the road. And he explained that the actual race car drivers never do that. He says they're very safe because they actually know how dangerous it is. Because on the track, there isn't anything else. There's not going to be somebody coming across. There's no red light. There's not someone coming the other way. There's no pedestrians. There's none of those. So therefore, it's there, and they have everything out there. Still they're careful, but here they know at any time, at any direction, anything can come. So they're very careful drivers, So the whole point is that you're only going to be teaching or dealing something that they can relate to, but it's not that you have to do that. But the devotees say, no, we have to do that. No, we don't have to do that. We dress how we dress. They're dressed how they dress. We teach them how to utilize their dress, how we use our dress. Because the point is how you use the dress is more important than the dress. But that doesn't mean, therefore, then it doesn't matter. We don't have to use this dress. Why wouldn't we use this dress? It's the superior form of dress to use how we use it. That's the thing. So this discrimination is not being applied. So here he's simply saying... And he's trying to put it in the context so that the mullah understands. Same time, the mullah is trying to discuss it on the platform of the, the Vedanta level, or the Vedic level, because he has discussed with Brahmins before. It wasn't that he went to one Brahmin. He's discussed with many Brahmins, right? And he's never gotten any satisfaction. So somebody must have recommended, well, maybe these guys. Or it was just some other group. And so since he was there, he thought, okay, let's discuss this. Yes.
I've noticed from his presentation that he first refutes and then he just presents.
That's very good.
When you're discussing sometimes, you get caught in the other parties.
Yeah, trying to explain. Yeah. But then the problem is then that brings up doubts, because there's an explanation where there's doubts, right? When you have your thesis, there's no doubt. It may not be you accept or reject, but there's no. As soon as you explain, that's when your doubt comes. So that's why then your examples, the logic that you present then after that, has to be something that they'll relate to. Then you can again go back, because you always have your thesis. You're always trying to go back to the thesis. But that's a good point. You remove the doubt, then they'll understand the explanation, because the explanation is good. It's just that the doubt keeps them from appreciating it.
Okay.
Our divine prophet has especially castigated such butte parasta. So even more than worship of a deity is worship of everything else, right? So even the prophet has made a distinction between the deity worship and then things that are not the deity, right? Then in that case, you would have thought that he would have put in, camels and asses also, but that's prominent over there, but somehow or another he didn't like that. Maybe because he was putting into the Hindu context. Because Hindus don't worship camels. So. Gorachan Babaji. Oh, no, we're up. Okay, so we'll continue in the evening.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki
Jaya
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki
Jaya
Janyata Gaura Prema.